Hey guys, I'm Paul Bates and this is the Fermentation Podcast. Join me on this journey to put fermentation into practice, create culture, and revive this lost art that connects all of us to our cultures of the past. Today is Friday, November 7th, 2014, and this is episode number 13. Today I have on the show a couple of ladies you're going to just love. They're the O'Lardy ladies, Kelly Liston and Tamara Minnelli from the blog O'Lardy.com. And I have to tell you, listening to this back again, they just cracked me up and were such a pleasure to talk to. They're so full of information and they really just want to teach people all they know about real food, fermentation, and just health in general. We cover quite a few different areas from fermenting mushrooms, holiday ferments like cranberries and apple butter, essential oils, and then go through their book on fermentation, which, by the way, after the fact, they wanted me to let you know, their book O'Lardy's Guide to Fermenting Fruits and Vegetables is on sale until Thanksgiving, and then it goes back to its regular price. But they wanted to support the show and support you guys listening to the Fermentation Podcast, so only for people listening to this podcast, this episode. Use discount code PODCAST30, all lowercase, with a 30 at the end. That's PODCAST30, to get 30% off of their book. That's a pretty good discount I could get for you guys, and I appreciate them so much supporting the show. So before we get to talking to the O'Lardy ladies, all the topics and links for today's show will be in the show notes at fermentationpodcast.com. If you'd like to get a hold of me, email me at paul@fermentationpodcast.com. I always appreciate your emails. Or go to the website, click on the contact button on the top. You can also connect to me on Facebook, Pinterest, YouTube, and Twitter. Just go to fermentationpodcast.com and you should see the links in the sidebar. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, just head up to the website, click on the guest button on the top, and there's a guest submission form I have there that you can fill out. All right, today we have on the show Kelly Liston and Tamara Minnelli, who run the blog O'Lardy.com, teach classes on workshops and fermentation, and also wrote the book O'Lardy's Guide to Fermenting Fruits and Vegetables. And they also have a big interest in real food. Kelly and Tamara, welcome to the Fermentation Podcast.
Thanks. Thank
you. It's great to have you on the show. When I had, I don't know if you know Ariana Mullins, she kind of recommended that I get into contact with you guys. You guys came highly recommended. She thought it'd be a, you know, an interesting podcast. So
that's awesome. She's great. So we're excited.
Maybe I guess to start with you, Tamara, and then maybe you can follow up, Kelly. Can you just give the audience a brief introduction of yourself and maybe a little bit of your story?
Sure. Well, personally, I got into the real food lifestyle, if you will, maybe about 9 or 10 years ago, and just with something small, like eating some organic foods or drinking whole milk or that type of thing. And then it was a slow curve, I guess, to start fermenting. And I've been fermenting now for about 7 years, maybe. Never thought I would be fermenting as much as I do now, but like with anything, the more you do it, the more you learn, the easier it becomes. And then it's become really fun. And Kelly and I started the blog about 2 years ago, or just over 2 years ago, I believe now. And it's been great to learn from each other and to share our knowledge with people and to learn from some of our readers. It's been a great way to promote healthy living and fermenting foods.
Yep. And me, Kelly, I kind of have a similar story to Tamara. Although I don't think I've been doing it as long as she has, I really got interested in real food probably, how old's my son? He's 10. So probably 4 or 5 years ago, when I was just very interested in what was in my food and where it was coming from. And, I think it started with a search for making my own bread, and I fell into soaking grains and fermenting, and it blew my mind, and I had to know more. And so I'm pretty much I like to drink from a fire hose and pretty much tried to learn everything I could possibly learn at once. But it really was fermenting just kind of came along with the desire to eat better food and nourish our bodies and my family as well. And my husband brews his own beer. And so it wasn't really a far jump to start fermenting food because I already had a pretty good knowledge of what it meant to ferment. And I wasn't as scared, I think, as a normal person thinking they're going to poison their families. I totally agree with Tamara. It's been so much fun through O'Lardy just sharing our adventures in fermenting and learning from each other. I learned a lot from Tamara just because I probably hadn't fermented as long as she had, but it's very simple and that's what I like about it.
Yeah, 7 years is quite a bit of time. Must be interesting, you guys running the blog together. You know, normally it's like one person, you know, does the whole show. Mm-hmm. How did you guys actually meet? Tamara has been fermenting for like 7 years. And
okay. Well, it's actually funny. We actually started the blog before we met in person, which I realize sounds very odd. It's like a blind date or something. You get married. I don't know. How I really met Kelly, we have a mutual friend her mutual friend lived here in Chicago by me. And at my baby shower, I was presented with these beautiful burp cloths, like, you know, that you would use to wipe a baby when they spit up, that Kelly had sewed. And so our mutual friend had given me these beautiful burp cloths as a gift, and it had her Kelly's card on it. And I contacted her, I think, over the year for like 40 burp cloths. I think Kelly was sewing up a storm to try to get me, because I had all these friends that were having babies and these burp cloths were so cute. And at that point, you know, we friended each other on Facebook, or it just kind of came about that we had similar interests. I think it might have been something about kefir greens or something that she was like, wait, what? You know about those too? It was, so we just kind of started sharing recipes via email, you know, just little bits here and there. Sometimes it's hard to find like minds, especially when you're into this really kind of weird traditional food like fermenting and stuff. So we started just talking. I was interested in starting a blog and I was talking to her about it, and we decided to, why not split the work and start it together? And we actually launched the blog in August of 2012, and we met in person. Was it September of that year?
Yeah,
you came to Chicago. So we had, it's been great because we have very similar viewpoints, but then we also have different lifestyles and we live in different regions of the country. And so I think the blog's interesting because it shows our similarities, but then also we do things differently too, which is kind of cool to show people that it doesn't all have to be done one way or one, you know, particular way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. You know, when looking at the name Olardi, it first kind of hit me like, you know, lard is in there, and you guys mentioned throughout the whole website, you know, real food. What do you guys mean when you say real food in your terms?
Kelly, do you want to
take that one? Yeah. Real is basically, just think of it, I think of it in whole terms, not processed, straight from the farmer, if you can get it, make it yourself. Whole, like I said, whole fats and vegetables and meats and breads and anything that you can get as simple as possible. We're big into label reading, and typically the lower the amount of ingredients, the better, and more real it seems. If you can read it, if you know what it is, it's real. And it's as simple as that. That's how I see real food. And I think Tamara feels the same way.
I totally agree with that. I'm very much like a label reader. I'm not sure if you noticed, but I've actually been vegan for like 10 years. You know, I'm sure it doesn't fit into the same kind of paleo type of thing, but very much into real food, you know, less processed things. The more you can get to the whole food, the better. I think that's probably where most of our health problems nowadays come from.
Just exactly.
Long Agreed. Lists, you know, a lot of ingredients you can't even pronounce.
Yeah, it's scary. It's scary, actually. Nobody's eating food anymore. They're eating chemicals. Yeah.
So, Tamara, being into fermentation for like 7 years now, mm-hmm. How did you actually get, or what was, you know, maybe some of the first things that kind of got you into fermenting?
I know I discovered some blogs. I was following a lot of popular, quote, real food blogs, and that's where I got a little interest in the traditional food movement with raw milk and pastured meats and fermented foods. And the recipes on some of the blogs just made me nervous. You mix a bunch of stuff together and you leave it on your counter at room temperature for a couple weeks and you're going to eat it. That just sounded crazy to me. I don't know if I was given the book Nourishing Traditions or if I purchased the book Nourishing Traditions, but that book I think is just a traditional food Bible, if you will. It's just chock full of so much information beyond fermenting. And I finally decided to make one of the sauerkraut recipes in that book. And it turned out it worked. It was a lot of work and it turned out a little saltier than I would have liked, but nobody died eating it and we kind of enjoyed it, but it still seemed a little overwhelming. And I remember I took a class through my local Weston A. Price Foundation chapter. There was a woman teaching a class and she broke it down into such easy bits, which is what we've tried to do on our website, that you don't have to make fermenting so complicated. And when I left that class, I just was empowered I left with things I had actually made in the class. And then I came home and I was like, oh my goodness, we can really ferment anything. And I just started fermenting from there. if it's a fruit or a vegetable, it generally gets fermented in our house. So,
and I know, I think maybe Kelly, you had mentioned, or it was one of you that said, you know, you were scared about poisoning your family.
Yeah,
I think everyone is.
Yeah. I think the first time I made pickles and, you know, leaving it on the counter and it starts bubbling, you're thinking like, oh my God, botulism or, you know, something like that. If say somebody is like nervous about fermentation, I mean, obviously I know it's pretty safe, but what would you guys tell them?
This is Kelly. I just say, just try it. It's not hard to do. And I think that once people actually try it and see how easy it is and how safe it is when, you know, done correctly, it's pretty hard to mess up a ferment, I think. But if someone just tries it and sees that it's just as easy as chopping up some carrots and adding some dill and garlic and salt and water and whey if you want, or a starter if you want, and let it sit on the counter, and in a week you have some really yummy dill pickles, dill carrots actually. I think that simply trying something and seeing for themselves, it's not a big investment to ferment foods and time or materials at all. Tamara, do you have any?
Yeah.
Thoughts?
Yeah. The only thing, I agree with everything Kelly just said. It's hard. I mean, it's easy to ferment once you get going. And if it does mess up, it's pretty obvious. There's either going to be fuzzy mold, and we all know, like, if it's fuzzy gray or green or black mold, you don't want to eat it. If it smells putrid, I mean, fermenting does have a sour smell, but if it smells something that, oh, you can't even get it near your face, don't eat it. So if it goes bad, you're going to know. It's not going to be like, oh, this tastes kind of good. Is it bad? No, it will be okay. So more trusting your smell, your sense of taste, your sense of smell, and that it'll work out.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I've had a couple that, you know, maybe had a little mold and I scraped it off, but having a big carpet up there that's fuzzy, it's kind of a problem. What are some of the things, you know, you guys have tried to ferment, and, you know, maybe some of your favorite ferments?
Go ahead, Tamara.
One of my favorite, actually, I'm looking at my counter right now, it's fermenting right now, is a fermented cranberry sauce that is on our blog. It's perfect for the holiday, for Thanksgiving and whatnot, but it's also great all year long over yogurt. It's sweet, but sour, and it's really yummy. My daughter loves it. We also go through a lot of different krauts. I'll make a kraut whenever I have like wilting vegetables in my refrigerator that I haven't gotten to. I'll go get a head of cabbage and chop up the rest of the wilting vegetables and make some sort of a kraut mixture. And it might have 10 ingredients. It might have 2 ingredients. I have no idea. But those are pretty standard in our house. Kraut. I have a whole refrigerator in my basement filled with variety of krauts that I've made. And I never label anything either, so it's always a mystery when I open it up. But it's going to be definitely krauts, and then the cranberry sauce, some of our go-tos in our household.
Yeah, the cranberry sauce seems pretty popular right now, you know, Thanksgiving coming up. And I've seen a lot of those recipes posted in some of the online forums. Mm-hmm. I'll definitely be checking out your recipe there.
Great.
I was going through your website and I saw some things like you were fermenting mushrooms, which for some strange reason, I just never even thought about that.
Can
you maybe talk about that a little bit, how it turned out, what it tasted like?
Yeah. You know, like Tamara said earlier that if it's a fruit or a vegetable, we can ferment it. And we kind of just, at least I do, I think, oh, I could ferment that. Like, why not? Just throw it in there and see what happens. And I just thought the idea of fermented mushrooms sounded delicious. And I just kept thinking how good it would taste with eggs. And so I thought, why not? I'll try it. And I added thyme and I may have added garlic. I can't remember. The website, or the recipe, is on our website, but they turned out delicious. They were, they still held some of their spongy texture. And, but I will say that we did have to eat them quickly because the longer they sat, they just kind of became mushy. The texture was just mushy, but it wasn't, I mean, they were in there for a while, but so I could experiment with how long they'd be good for. But
was it just a salt brine, or, you know, did you add a bunch of herbs
and
things?
I added a starter to it. I like to add starters to things just because it's easy and controlled. Typically I do a wild ferment with my krauts. I'll do a wild with my kraut, but, cause it turns out well for me. But, there was probably a culture in there.
Yeah, I'll definitely put a link in the show notes to that. I'll be trying that. Actually, I have a container of mushrooms in the fridge right now I need to do something with, so.
It was delicious.
They were really good.
They were amazing with eggs. Oh, I added marjoram, garlic, and thyme. And I did add the starter.
Were they the portobello or just white button or I guess?
Yeah, I think that I just sliced some, well, they look kind of like portobello, but the small ones.
Oh, those baby bella ones?
Yeah, the baby bella ones. And I just sliced them and crammed them as many as I could in there. And they were really good. They did not last long. I ate pretty much all of those. I don't think any of my family had any.
That sounds pretty good. I bet you could even, maybe if you add onions and garlic and blend it up, maybe it could be like kind of a raw, like a raw gravy or something. I don't know, just some ideas to throw out there.
The spread.
And also, speaking of the holidays, I seen, just a few days ago, you posted fermented pumpkin butter.
Oh, yeah.
That was
now that sounds really good. How'd you come up with that? And
People ferment. I've heard people fermenting apple butter before, and I had never tried. I don't really make apple butter. If I make something, it's sauce, and then the kids just eat it. But I had never tried fermenting that, and I could. Fermented applesauce. That sounds good. But I just thought if I'm going to share a pumpkin butter recipe, I might as well ferment it. So I did. And all I did was just make a regular pumpkin butter, let it cool on the counter. And then I stirred in some starter and put a lid on it. And I did 24 hours and then popped it in the fridge. And there you have it. I would imagine that I haven't tasted it. I tasted it. I had some last week, but I don't know how long it lasts because I've never fermented pumpkin butter before, but I would imagine that with the sugar in there, I'll tend to get a little bit more alcohol-y sooner than a vegetable would just because of the sugars.
Yeah, I bet that's pretty interesting. I'll definitely have to try that one too. You know, being fermenting for like 7 years, is there any mistakes you've made along the way or, you know, either one of you, have you guys ended up with mold or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you left it on the counter a little too long.
I fermented some beets that.
Oh, that was gross.
That was really gross. They did not. I grated them and they definitely had an alcohol ferment. And I opened them up and it was. Well, I noticed that they were changing color, which normally beets stay a nice pink color and they were turning white. And I'm like, that's strange.
They look like worms. It's on the blog too.
That's on the blog too. So sometimes it doesn't work out. I'm like, okay, that was really gross. But and I've done kombucha that had a mold grow. But other than those two, I think that, and I haven't been able to get a sourdough starter to stay alive. But that was in my old house. And I don't know if there was some environment in my kitchen that was preventing that from happening. But
yeah, you have to try that again. Sourdough is really good.
I love sourdough.
At least I know how you guys have talked about sprouting grains and being more raw like that. Another interesting thing I found on your blog was kind of fitting into the whole homesteading thing. You posted something about fermenting your chicken feed.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds really cool. And and about the health of your birds. I've just anecdotally heard from, here and there about that. Can you talk about that a little bit? You know, how that went?
Sure. It actually came from, I had heard about it as well, and I hadn't done it. It was on my list of things to do, but my hens had come out of a molt and only one of them was laying eggs. And that was frustrating to me because they weren't molting and they were happy and had a clean coop and they were well fed. So a friend of mine had said that when she started fermenting her feeds, that she was just getting eggs like crazy. And so that was the impetus for me actually fermenting the food. And I mean, just fermenting their food improves enzyme content and increases vitamin levels, becomes more digestible, and it boosts usable protein, which is essential for egg laying, but it's also essential during a molt. So I'm actually going to make sure that this fall, now, because they're starting to molt now, that they have fermented food to help with their protein level to grow new feathers. So they'll come out of it faster because I want eggs. But it turned out really well. And I did learn that because I in my post, I put lids on it and I did notice that gases build up really quickly. So since I've been doing it now, I just cover it with a cloth. And so I don't have to worry about exploding jars or anything like that. Although that's never happened to me, but I don't have to burn jars constantly.
How'd you actually do that? Was it just, you take your bird feed and then cover it with a salt brine or just water?
No, it's just water. It's just water. You take your, I just guessed on the amount that I was doing. I wanted to make sure they ate it all in one day and I didn't have leftover. And for me, that ended up being about 3 cups for my 5 hens. And I just put 3 cups in a jar, covered it with water and waited 3 days and then gave it to him. And each day I added a jar so that every day I could give him a new batch, so to speak. A lot of people use a big gallon bucket, 5 gallon bucket, and they'll ferment a lot and then just scoop it out and then add more grain as they remove feed. They'll add fresh grain because there's already a ferment going on. It'll just turn over faster. And that's practical if you have a lot of hens. But if you just have a small flock, I didn't need that much fermenting at one time. So I just did the jar method, but there's many ways.
It seems how some people actually sprout their grains and almost give them just a big bucket of sprouts to increase the nutritional component of it. But
I've done that too.
Okay.
I've sprouted them but created a fodder. So I grew the grass essentially from the grain, and they loved that. That was gone in no time. I don't even think it lasted 10 minutes. They ripped it.
You said you actually have had a bigger difference from the fermented.
You mean for?
For the bigger difference fermented, you know, when I guess they were starting to have problems or they stopped their cycle.
That's right. They had stopped laying, and then I had given them the fermented feed. And then 3 days later, the rest of my hens started laying all at the same time. Now, I don't know if it was a fermented food. I like to think it was. It was pretty coincidental.
That's pretty interesting. I know you're out in, I guess, Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes.
And Tamara, you're in Chicago.
Yep, outside Chicago.
So I have no
chickens. We're not allowed to have them in our town. I'm sad. I live vicariously through Kelly.
I was going to say Phoenix, I could probably see a homestead. You know, Chicago, maybe not so much. But I guess in terms of homesteading, you know, how does fermentation fit into that? You know, do you grow a lot of things and then ferment those, or?
That is my goal. I do not have a garden. Tamara has a lovely garden in her yard. We just moved, and part of my plan for our backyard that's not landscaped is to have beds where I can grow my own food and definitely ferment, because we love eating it. And my kids will eat a fermented carrot stick over a regular carrot stick. So might as well grow them if I can.
That's amazing how fermentation can fit into so many different areas, like not only food, but like you're saying, chicken feed, fodder. I've also seen where you can take and grow big patches of comfrey. I don't know if you've ever messed with that, but yeah, comfrey, if you say take a 5 gallon bucket, completely fill it up and then just fill it up with water, leave it there for a few months, it completely dissolves because it's so high in nitrogen. It's almost like a compost starter.
Then
you can water it down, I think 10 to 1, and you have a really high nutrient liquid fertilizer.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So,
really cool.
And then I'm sure, you know, you probably know all about comfrey's medicinal. That was another question I was going to ask you about the essential oils.
Mm-hmm.
I seen you guys have classes, and how does that fit into, you know, real food? And do you use essential oils at all in fermentation, or are they too powerful?
I've used essential oils to flavor, like, one, I mean, and they're very powerful. So one drop, you know, say orange or lemon or something is plenty to flavor. One or two drops is plenty usually to flavor something. To flavor my kombucha tea or I make a variety. I teach a lot of classes on soda alternatives. So when I'm getting ready to teach a class, I'll have kombucha tea, ginger bug soda, water kefir, lacto fermented. So I have like 10 different sodas going on, and I'll use essential oils sometimes, not all the time, but just to experiment, to flavor drinks. I've never really used them to flavor a fermented food, but I wouldn't see why that would, like, I'm looking at my cranberry sauce right now, and I'm thinking a little drop of cinnamon or something would actually be probably pretty tasty. But I think essential oils come into play. We blog about more than real food. Also, we kind of tackle healthy living and, you know, detox techniques and stress reduction and just general wellness on our site with a main focus on real food. And essential oils really come into play there as being, you know, you can use them for so many things, for immune support, for digestive support, respiratory support, helping flavoring foods, fermented or not. You can use them in so many different ways and get the therapeutic benefits of the particular oil that you're using.
Yeah, and I saw you both actually teach classes in, say, essential oils and fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
What do you kind of go over in the fermentation classes? I know you said soda. Do you teach them how to make pickles and, you know, other things like hot sauce? Or
go ahead, Tam.
I actually have one tomorrow, and my topic is fermented foods for the holidays. So that's hence the cranberry sauce that's sitting on my counter. It depends. I'll have a focus for sure. So it's either just kombucha tea or alternative sodas or fermented dips and appetizers. I always demo fermented carrots because just as the demo, because for fermenting foods, drinks are a little bit different, but for fermenting foods, it's really a technique. And once you know the technique of fermenting carrots or fermenting green beans or what have you, you can really ferment anything. You know, then you can look in your refrigerator and say, oh my goodness, I have five vegetables that I'm not going to eat this week. Let me just ferment them. So I usually always give the carrot as a demo just to show people how easy fermenting is. And that it's just a technique. And if, and kind of like Kelly was talking about earlier when she couldn't remember if she used a starter in the mushrooms or not, it doesn't really, everyone kind of finds a technique that works best for them. Sometimes you use a starter, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you use whey, sometimes you use a powder, sometimes you use, you know, liquid from a previous batch of sauerkraut. It's kind of, it is a science, but it's also an art and kind of fun to play around with it. So I try to teach that in the classes.
It is pretty amazing how many different things that you can use to get it started, or almost nothing, and then the flavor turns out completely different. It's very interesting. What would be like some of your absolute favorite recipes that, say, somebody just starting out would start with? You had mentioned maybe fermenting carrot sticks.
I love those. They taste like pickles.
Would you say so pickles good. Is too hard, or should somebody do like a sauerkraut or something like that?
And so I think that most people typically don't eat much sauerkraut in their diets just because they associate maybe with Reubens and they don't eat Reubens every day. I don't know. But food that, like a pickle or a carrot or green beans, something that they may eat as a snack.
Salsa.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Salsa. Just something that they might eat as a snack might be easy to start with because it's really easy to do and they're delicious. And then having a kraut as a next step, which is just as easy, but it makes a lot. So I like to keep big jars of kraut to serve with dinner in my fridge. And so I think someone getting started might start with something that would be like a snack, and salsa is easy and carrots are easy and pickles are easy. There's mushrooms are easy. It's so easy. But something that you might just want to snack on or nibble on might be easy to start with. Tamara, do you have any ideas?
Yeah, I would say the carrots for sure. That's why I always demo them first in my class because they're easy and they're delicious. And one of the things we've talked about in our classes and also on Olardi is with fermented foods, while I do and Kelly does, I mean, we eat maybe a small portion of sauerkraut or pickles as a snack or carrots as a snack. There are other ways to serve them too. So for, especially when someone has never eaten a fermented food before and they're looking at you like you're crazy, like you want me to eat what and feed my kids what? You, like with the carrots, you can chop them up and put them in a big green salad. And if you have a big green salad with cucumbers and tomatoes and, you know, all your usual fixings for salad, and you add chopped fermented carrots and toss it with your favorite dressing, the family that's brand new to fermented foods and maybe a little skittish of like, whoa, what's this? They're never going to know what's in there. In my class tomorrow, I usually chop up carrots and put them in a prepared guacamole and serve it with chips. And then later I'll say, and actually the carrots are in the guacamole. And people are like, what? They can't believe it. And so that gets their minds kind of thinking of how can they start to eat these foods that do taste a little different and are different. And especially get their, if they have children that are not, you know, broad eaters, or if their spouse is a little concerned about this, there's so many ways to get fermented foods in your diet without just sitting down to a platter of sauerkraut, you know, putting sandwiches, putting the fruit stuff, putting it in smoothies. I sometimes use the liquid from sauerkraut and use it as a vinegar for salad dressing.
You can mix it into ketchup.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You can ferment ketchup.
You can ferment. There you go.
There you go.
True.
Like there's so many ways to get it. And especially with, or even like a fermented salsa, I think tastes delicious. But if someone is used to eating Tostitos salsa or, you know, some sort of jarred salsa, it's going to taste different. And I'll tell that person, I'll say, well, mix it. Mix half fermented salsa with half of your jarred salsa. It's not the perfect food. Of course not. But you're getting there. You know, it's like you're better to do a little bit of good instead of just striving for the perfect thing. And then over time, I think it changes taste buds and people get more used to that sour fermented flavor. And then you're more likely to eat more and not have to hide it as much.
Especially with the pickles, when I had first tried them, they were so different than a jar of pickles.
Mm-hmm.
It took maybe a bit to get used to, but then, you know, now if you go back to a jar, like kind of tastes fake, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carrots in the guacamole. That's quite the innovation.
Yeah, you chop them up real fine. You have one of those chunky guacamoles, and then it's like, surprise.
So with all the different things that you guys have made, is there anything, you know, you want to branch out into in the future, like, you know, fermenting meats or like you're saying, maybe breads or, you know, any of the other categories like yogurt?
Well, I've done yogurt before in the past, and I had success with yogurt, but I really like a thick yogurt. And so I'd find that I'd have to strain it a lot. And that was a lot of work. But I did recently start getting into just making my own milk kefir or kefir. I'm not sure how to say it. And because it's easy, you can just use the grain and you dump milk in a jar, add the grain, and then the next day you have milk kefir or kefir. And that's super easy to add to smoothies. And my daughter likes drinking it straight. So that's my newest venture. I'd like to get into making sourdough breads again. I just need, and I have a starter that I got from Cultures for Health. So I just need to get that growing. I'm just terrified I'm going to kill it because that's what I do to everything, every bread thing. So we'll see. What about you, Cam?
No, I would like to try sourdough. We don't eat a whole lot of bread in our house. So I'll buy like a sprouted bread, you know, already prepared and keep it. Well, a loaf of bread will last us a family of three for like a month and a half because we just don't eat a lot of bread. But I do think sourdough, I think we could handle a little better. And I would, I actually have the same starter in my refrigerator too. I'm just afraid to get it out, kill it also. But I would like to branch out in that aspect, the sourdough. I think that sounds fun. And good sourdough is just so tasty. Mm.
There's some really easy recipes out there too. Like I had posted one a while back about, I don't know if you've seen the no knead recipe where,
oh yeah,
you just leave it sitting on the counter for 18 hours and you don't even have to knead it because all of the yeast do all the work for you.
Oh, that sounds perfect.
Yeah. You just kind of leave it there. You toss it a couple times and then throw it in a Dutch oven into the oven. And it almost comes out. It comes out very crispy. It's very much like, you would get a brick fired bread, I guess.
Oh, cool.
Do you guys, do you have these ferments all the time or are they like an occasional thing? Is it a daily thing that you guys have? Like you drink kombucha all the time or?
It is Tamara. In our house, on a good day, I say we don't do anything every day. I mean, just cause it's impossible to do that. But on a regular day, we try to have something fermented with every meal that we have in the at the house. And for my husband, that's just dinner. And for me, it's usually all three meals. And my daughter, it's breakfast and dinner. And that might be even something like yogurt, you know, even store-bought yogurt, but something that I would consider has some bacteria in it. I do a lot of, I ferment ketchup, I ferment mustard, I'll make ranch dressing with kefir. All of those kind of condiment type deals will have fermented aspects to them. And we try to always have some fermented vegetable of some sort with our dinner in particular. But try, and if we haven't had fermented foods for a few days, then we definitely up our probiotic intake as far as a supplement. So I try to monitor, you know, how things are going that way. But we all three of us notice a difference if we're not having some bacteria in whatever form we're getting it in our diet. So we try to get it in some form daily.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I offer something, a fermented food at dinner. Usually I just put, last night I put a jar of kimchi and a jar of red kraut on the table and I let everybody pick. And typically it's just a bite. Unless my daughter loves red kraut and so she'll eat it. She would have eaten the whole thing if I would have let her. But my other boys, they'll eat every carrot and every green bean. But of those two things, they just took a bite, which is enough. I mean, there's trillions of bacteria in that bite that you take. But in their lunches, because I pack their lunches, I'll typically put in some green beans or a pickle or carrots or whatever I have. And breakfast is probably the only time they don't get something fermented unless I'm making a smoothie and I put milk kefir in it. And that's a good day, like Tamara said. Like yeah. Some days I forget. They don't remind me. And I typically eat something with every meal because I like it. I like the krauts and I like kimchi with eggs. So that's me.
Yeah, it's nice to hear that, you know, some of the kids are actually interested in this a little bit. I know kids can be picky, but I've heard some people, they'll give them like a blackberry soda, or I've even heard of fermented fruit leathers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah. My daughter loves those.
Have you guys noticed any kind of health benefits, or is this more of like, you know, just in addition to a normal diet, you know, just for taste? Do you have any ideas where it would be very medicinal to add a lot of these things to your diet?
I think, this is Kelly, I think that we probably have seen a benefit. I probably wouldn't be able to put my finger on it, but since starting eating regularly fermented foods, because we don't take a probiotic supplement, that we're just well. We don't really go to the doctor very much. And I don't know if that fermented food is really one key to your gut health. And I think that it's benefited us in that way, that we're just not getting as sick as we have in the past. And that's me. And my digestion's better. I feel like if I travel and don't eat any fermented food, I know it. What about you, Tamara?
Yeah, we're about the same. I think it's hard to pinpoint.
Right.
I experience this health benefit just from fermented food, because I think fermented food comes along. If you're eating fermented foods, you're generally doing numerous other things to help your body. But I do feel it's an important part of general immune support and gut health, along with other things. We do, in general, whether it's just from fermented foods or from eating a good diet in general and sleeping well and using essential oils and taking certain supplements, et cetera, all three of the people in my family notice a difference in our energy, getting sick not as often, or if we get sick, getting better faster. And again, my family, we do travel quite a bit, and I notice, and I mean, you know, sometimes you could maybe find kombucha or something depending on where you are, but sometimes if you're at a hotel, you just sort of, you know, you have what they have. We notice, all three of us notice a difference in our digestion when we don't have fermented foods. And that's even, we'll definitely take probiotics and increase some of the supplements when we are traveling, but we still notice a difference in that aspect. So from the digestive aspect alone, it's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, I know. I've seen some websites out there. They have these outrageous claims like, oh, you know, cure cancer and all that kind of thing. I definitely think it's more of like just an addition to a healthy diet. So it's nice to hear you say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's lots of things you can do to heal your body. And I think fermented foods is one of, you know, the many things that probably should all be done, you know, to help the body heal. But it's not like I don't think somebody was eating a processed food diet, not sleeping, taking lots of traditional, you know, prescription medicines, and then having sauerkraut once a day. I don't know that that's going to really, I mean, it's not going to hurt them, but I don't know it's going to be like the miracle key. I think there's going to be other lifestyle changes that have to be made also.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about your book that you guys wrote. I guess you guys co-wrote it, right?
Yep, we did. Yep.
And that's O'Lardy's Guide to Fermenting Fruits and Vegetables. I've gone through, you know, somewhat of like the table of contents. I've seen a lot of the pictures that are in there are just gorgeous.
Kelly's a photographer.
Yeah, I saw that. It's nice when, you know, you have a recipe and then you have a beautiful picture to go along with it. Can you guys just kind of go through the cookbook, or I guess it wouldn't even be called a cookbook since it's fermenting, but just go through the fermenting guide and, you know, let everybody know what's in there.
Yeah, well, we developed this guide. It has about over 40 recipes, fruits and vegetables, and some dips and a couple drinks. But we also go into the history of fermenting, you know, what it is, why in the world one would do this in the first place, the health, you know, the many health benefits that are being aligned with gut health in general, and fermented foods is one way of getting your gut bacteria healthy. And we give tutorials on how to ferment, all the materials you need to ferment, and we link to the actual products. If you don't, you know, where do I buy this particular product? We link to all of that for you. There is a video, like a little quick start video, kind of break it down simply. We really just try to make it a book that's pretty in-depth, but still simple, that somebody could actually read through it and say, okay, I'm going to make some, fermented carrots now. I feel comfortable doing so. And then Kelly's pretty pictures too. It definitely makes it pleasant to look at, and you can kind of see how things will look when you're done fermenting them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see in there, it looks like you have what, 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 8 different types of sauerkraut, including kimchi, some chutneys. Oh, yeah, I see what you mean—the fruit leather, fermented fruit leather.
Yeah,
yeah, gotcha. And then quite a few different juices, like fermented orange juice, lemonade, apple juice, beet kvass.
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting.
And what's cool about that, I think we hope too that even with the 8 recipes of kraut, if people really read through it and really start experimenting with the recipes, in our opinion, all fermented recipes are really a guide. I mean, you could make 100 different kinds of kraut, you know, depending on what you have available to you. So hopefully getting people comfortable enough that they could ferment, you know, if they're trying to do our red kraut recipe, but they're missing a few ingredients, well, hey, sub in some other ingredients, or you don't have beet kvass, make some other kind of kvass. You know, try different things, because it really is a technique, and that it can be applied to any fruits or vegetable.
It's definitely an art. I've had that where, you know, you're missing an ingredient and some people just kind of get stuck and they don't know what to do. Where others, you know, they just kind of continue on without it. And mm-hmm. maybe you come up with something interesting. So yeah, it looks like a very interesting guide you have there. I would definitely encourage everybody to go out and check that out. Do you have any favorite resources on fermentation? You know, like any books or blogs that you guys like to read or you've gone through? I know you said Nourishing Traditions, which I've gone through that book before, had a lot of good information.
Yes. I actually have to go to my bookshelf because I don't remember the names of them, but I always love reading a book because typically sometimes I find information that I may not have known about. Real food fermentation and wild fermentation are some two of my favorites that I look at. Let's see. And then, I mean, there's a bunch of websites.
Yeah, like Nourished Kitchen.
Yeah, she has some great.
Jenny's got some great recipes. Fearlesseating.net.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Craig has, a lot of stuff on healing digestion. He's got some really good recipes on there, too. There's a bunch of ones out there. I like the Real Food Fermentation book also. There's also one called Fermented, just Fermented. It's a paleo fermented recipe book. I like that one a lot. It has really pretty pictures also.
Yeah, I think I've heard about that one. I haven't actually gone through it. I've gone through Art of Fermentation and Wild Fermentation, and mm-hmm. yeah, that's pretty cool. And then, of course, there's lots of different groups online. I noticed you guys also are health coaches.
Well, Tamara is.
Oh, Tamara, okay.
Yep. Yeah, okay. I am. I help guide people toward healthy eating choices in person and via Olardi.
I'm a health coach in that aspect.
So yeah, if anybody's interested in that, you know, I can definitely tell you'd be good at that.
Yeah, on our website we have a whole tab at the top left that says education, I think it says. And then it drops down to classes that we offer. And then Chicago area resources, Phoenix area classes, as well as coaching services. So you can get all kinds of information from that education tab.
And just because you may not see a class that's available in your area doesn't mean that you can't reach out to us, because we have people contact us asking for classes in their area or in Phoenix or Chicago frequently. So when will your next class be? Well, let's set it up.
Yeah, you never know. You know, if I'm in the Phoenix area or the Chicago area, maybe I'll have to look you guys up.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, take a class. Kind of, I guess, as we get toward the end of the show and wrap up a little bit, say somebody is, you know, just getting into fermentation. Would you each have like any kind of advice for them or any kind of last thoughts that you would want to leave with the listeners?
I would say just try it.
Yeah.
And maybe start with a smaller batch of something, a pint of carrots or something, if you're worried about wasting carrots, herbs, kraut, or what have you. Just try it and see how it goes. And 99.9% of the time, it'll work out just fine. Just give it a go.
Unless they're my beets.
Unless they're your beets.
I haven't made those since.
And you, Kelly, anything, you know, any last thoughts you'd like
to
leave?
You know, I second what Tamara said. It's not as hard as someone may think it is, and it's not as scary. And you will figure that out as soon as you do it.
Gotcha. That's perfect. And I guess as we kind of close out, either Kelly or Tamara, can you maybe let the listeners know, you know, where they can find your website, buy your ebook, Guide to Fermenting Fruits and Vegetables, you know, if Facebook or anything else, you know, you guys would like to share?
Yeah, our website is www.olardi.com, and our book is on our website, and it is currently on sale for $6.99 until Thanksgiving, I believe. And we are on Facebook. Just search for Olardi and you'll find us. We're on Instagram too, and Twitter. Tamara, did I miss anything?
Pinterest. You're on Pinterest.
And all of that.
Everywhere. Yeah. But if you go to our site, we have all of those, you know, the buttons to all the social media stuff. So if you go to olardi.com, OHLARDY, you can click on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, forgot about that one, YouTube. We're also on YouTube.
Yeah, you guys are just all over the place.
We are everywhere. We can't, yeah.
Yeah, we're easy to find.
And Instagram's kind of fun, I think, to follow, because that tends to be a little more personal, like us taking pictures of our kids eating something or, you know, doing what disaster we made in our kitchen or something like that.
Like, I think, what did I post this morning? Picture of my smoothie that I was about to blend up. I think that's what I posted this morning. Good stuff.
All right, you guys. Everything we've talked about on today's show will be in the show notes. And I invite everyone to come out to fermentationpodcast.com, leave some comments, and also check out Kelly and Tamara's site, olardy.com, their ebook, Olardy's Guide to Fermenting Fruits and Vegetables. And if you guys are in either Phoenix or Chicago, you know, look them up to take one of their classes. Kelly and Tamara, I really appreciate you guys coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. It was fun.
All right. This has been Paul Bates from the Fermentation Podcast, along with Kelly Liston and Tamara Minnelli, encouraging you to put fermentation into practice, ferment responsibly, and get out there and create some culture.